Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of the Oddcast, Movies, Music and Games. This is now different from the A New Winter podcast. If you guys had listened to a previous episode, you would know that I announced that that is now coming to an end and instead being replaced by the Oddcast. And here with me is Daniel Gallagher. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yes, this is all new and weird, isn't it?
It's new. Hopefully not too weird. The content should be, though.
It's true. That's true. So for people that maybe didn't listen, the idea is that basically we are going to be doing a lot of what we've been doing towards the latter part of New Winter Culture anyway, which is touching on the kind of fringes of the mainstream, things that might be a little bit weird and a little bit odd in that sense. And the first episode that we're going to be doing today on this is a game, and the game is From Software's Bloodborne that was released in 2015, 5 years ago, half a decade ago. So what makes this game odd? Well, basically, you're a hunter that is living off the blood of these other creatures in this weird H.P. Lovecraft-type world where these interdimensional creatures are basically, yeah, perving on you, which is lovely. And that's what, you know, that makes it a little bit odd. So it's a good first edition of the Oddcast, I feel.
Not that odd, just a normal Wednesday for me.
Welcome home, good hunter. What is it you desire?
Yharnam is the home of blood ministration. You need only unravel its mystery. But where's an outsider like yourself to begin? Easy, with a bit of Yharnam blood of your own. Whatever happens, you may think it all a mere bad dream. Long ago, old Yharnam was overrun by the plague of beasts and left to rot and decay.
And now the only voices heard there are the howls of beasts.
Thirst for blood satiates us, soothes our fears, but beware, the frailty of men.
The plant makes us human, makes us more than human, makes us human no more.
Good hunter, your presence somehow soothes. What is it you desire? And so, the hunt begins again.
Sounds a bit like Stranger Things, maybe.
You know what? It is a bit like Stranger Things. And, you know, the idea that there's the, what do they call it? Like the other side, the underworld or whatever. And there is an element of that. There is definitely an element of that, and traveling and things existing on the same plane of existence, but in a different parallel universe. And yeah, I never really thought about the fact that Stranger Things is very Lovecraftian in its whole thing anyway, isn't it, I suppose?
It, absolutely, yeah. It seems to be, I mean, Lovecraft just in general seems to be at a peak at the moment.
It's true.
So I can see why this is popular. I mean, aside from being odd, what did you like about it, and why now, 5 years on, does it merit discussion?
I enjoy all the Dark Souls series, as people listen to this may know, and I think this is just as good, if not better, than the first Dark Souls, which is my favourite of the series. I love how it looks, I love its style, I love how it plays, and it still holds up in every which way, gameplay wise, graphically as well, to what's being released today. And there's still a community out there that love it. And there was a whole thing during the PS5 reveal where people were like wishing for a Bloodborne 2 because it's that well loved. And it's something that I think will kind of be known as one of the greatest PlayStation games of all time. So, yeah, so Bloodborne. Well, what is it? So it's an action RPG. Again, same kind of thing as Dark Souls. It's kind of like a gothic, surreal adventure. It's very dark. There's lots of blood. I mean, it is called Bloodborne. So
you'd feel cheated if there wasn't.
Well, exactly. And, yeah, it's released on the PS4 only. It's an exclusive, 2015. Sold millions of copies, got a ton of great reviews. It also had an expansion pack, a DLC pack called The Old Hunters, which is seen as one of the best DLC packs ever, which is like another game in itself. And its director was Miyazaki, who, as we all know, is the director of From Software, did all the Dark Souls stuff. And yeah, I don't know if you'd heard about this game before, Dan, or if you had any thoughts on what you were kind of expecting when you kind of went into doing a bit of research on this.
I was surprised to see how many people said they'd all rushed out and bought a PS4 just on the back of this game. I didn't, you know, realise that games were released like that anymore as exclusives for consoles. I just thought everything's sort of available to everyone. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Mm.
From the like intro and teaser videos and things, I was immediately kind of impressed by the visuals.
Mm.
I suppose I was expecting something maybe about more pure fantasy. So I quite liked that, like the gothic look.
Yeah.
Where it exists within, you know, something you can relate to. Although obviously then the creatures and things that you see, as we've said already, are quite out there in that Lovecraftian sense. But it kind of reminded me of like Gotham City, you know, from the Tim Burton films.
Yep.
But yeah, all of that, I thought that looks cool and looks very intriguing. And I can see why that would be a good setting for a game like this.
Yeah, definitely. There's an element where Miyazaki, and him and others, where Japanese people have a certain understanding of what European culture is like. So it's a Japanese interpretation of, you know, a European city, basically, and the kind of horror and gothic nature that comes with it because they don't have it. And I always think that's quite interesting. It's something we'll come on to a little bit more later about how, you know, visually it exists on its own thing almost, if that makes sense. It's not, I think they would have done like a whole bunch of research and, you know, some in European cities and architecture and stuff like that. But this does feel very much its own style. And I think that's what makes it really unique and what keeps people coming back is that it's just so different and so odd that it's very hard to like find anything that's even close to it.
It's been filtered through another culture.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, that makes me think of all the kind of different spirits and gods and monsters in Japanese history and folklore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already thinking now from some of these videos that I've seen, some of the creatures and monsters that I've seen them in other Japanese films, some anime. Mm. Well, not the exact specific ones, but like
yeah,
that.
Same look, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. So we're going to be talking about, we'll talk a bit about the story and we'll go into that. So there will be some spoilers for that. If just to warn you, basically, we'll talk about the gameplay, a little bit about the multiplayer stuff. We'll also talk about the design and music and stuff like that. So we're going to take a look at all aspects of the game kind of come to a conclusion about what we think and thought of it. I should say that I have played it in its entirety and Dan has not.
I've seen it. I had a little look, a goosey gander.
Yeah. So if people are looking for, I just want to say if people are looking for like a real deep dive on what everything means, on all the lore and stuff like that, that isn't this. It's just going to be a general look at the game. But there are tons of places where people go into deep dives about all that stuff. And I highly recommend you look at it. Even if you played it and you weren't really sure what's going on, take a look online and just, there's a great essay that I found on Reddit actually, which is breaks down chronologically the entire plot or inferred plot as well of the game. And it's a really great reading and it kind of clarified a few things to me because this game gets weird. It starts weird and it gets even weirder. So saying that, let's go into the plot. So the plot itself is very hard to describe, mainly because Miyazaki is well known for not letting his audiences in on the whole thing. So whereas with other games, there's lots of exposition, there's lots of diaries or whatever and stuff around that kind of fills in all the story. It's like story everywhere. It kind of hammers it home the point that it's trying to make at each time. Miyazaki doesn't do that. He leaves it up to you. You can go through the whole game like I've done with pretty much every single one of these games without knowing what the fuck is going on, basically. You have no clue. You've completed it. You're like, I've no idea what I've just done or what relevance it has to anything. But that's part of the beauty of it. And then a lot of his stuff, you find through like item descriptions or like just looking at the design of the level. So there might be like a certain statue of something in a certain place. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Enemy placement, things like that. It's like, well, what's that enemy doing here? That means X, Y, Z. And little snippets of dialogue and things that like, if you listen to it, if you listen to it as you play, it just makes absolutely zero sense until you really have to like think about it in the context that they're saying it. So the story you have to really work for to get out. But there are some like basic, things of the plot that you do kind of pick up along the way. So I'm going to kind of just try and describe it as much as I can. But I should say there's like, there's lots of NPCs you meet along the way who have their own like narrative arcs. There are lots of like...
Who's an NPC?
An NPC is a non-playable character. So essentially just other people in the game that like have a name that aren't... Well, they don't
give you a little bit of jibber jabber.
People walking around. Yeah, that's what I always think of as an NPC. But yeah, that's what it means, non-playable character. So there's a few people who have their own little stories and stuff, and most of which, I would say, during my run through, I didn't even touch upon. I had no idea about anything. And yeah, so I'll kind of get into that a little bit, and the ones that I kind of played through, because I think it's really cool the way they do it. And I think, you know, you'd really appreciate it actually as well, Dan, that, you know, it's a lot of it's inferred rather than actually, you know, point blank having someone just sit there and tell you exactly what's going on. But
yeah, and I like games and films and things, you know, that reward deeper analysis. It depends. Sounds like you can just play this at an absolutely superficial level and have a good experience, right?
Yeah,
that's, or if I mean, you want to dig around and talk to as many people as you can and pick up everything you can, then you're probably going to have a richer experience, right?
Yeah, and part of the longevity of the games, of all the Soulsborne, as they're called, Dark Souls, Bloodborne games, whatever, is that it's all up for interpretation. So there's a lot of discussions, there's a lot of YouTube videos, where people just try and work things out basically and what things mean, because there's no definitive answer necessarily for any of this. So it's all quite cool, but yeah, that's part of the beauty of the games and why people like it. It's because you kind of, you're filling in the gaps yourself, with a lot of this stuff. And it kind of, you know, try to hints at stuff along the way. But essentially, a lot of it is up for interpretation, which is great. Mostly in Dark Souls, I would say, but mainly there's a lot of that here that kind of goes on as well. But I feel like this has a bit more, I don't know, they all have a bit more of a narrative. But the opening intro to the game is basically you kind of wake up and someone's like putting blood into you, this like special blood or whatever. And then this werewolf comes to like kill you, but these little creatures save you, and you get whisked away, basically.
Who are you?
Well, exactly. It's a good point. Who are you? You're just some guy. So you're just you. It's very strange. Then you wake up.
Already poses a huge philosophical question.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good point. Like, you don't know anything about your character really whatsoever going in. And yeah, you're just told that that there's a hunt going on, whatever that means. And yeah, you wake up in this clinic and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Basically, you find out that each time that you die, you go to somewhere called the Hunter's Nightmare, which is this tiny self-enclosed place where there's this guy whose name I should remember, but I don't, but it begins with G. And I'm going to get lambasted by the Bloodborne fans for not remembering that. But there's this guy in a wheelchair, basically. He's like, hey, welcome to the Hunter's Dream. You know, it's great. And there's this little doll that after a while comes to life, and that's who levels you up and all this stuff. But you've got this little place. And then what happens is you go back into the, let's say, real world through this dream. So you're kind of, you're dying, but you're being rejuvenated at certain areas, certain points where these little lamps are throughout the game. So anyway, it's like, all this stuff is really weird. You go out into what's called Yharnam, which is the city, and basically there's these like villagers, let's say, like with all these like weapons, and they're out to kill you. The idea is that, yeah, it's the night of the hunt, and you find out basically later on that what happens is that there's this blood that's come from somewhere, which we'll kind of get onto a bit later. And it's basically tainting people. It's like a cure-all thing, right? Like, you're sick, you take this blood, you get better, right? But okay, what's happening is people are turning into beasts, essentially like werewolves, but like big fuck-off ones, basically. And so the idea is that to kind of keep everything on the down low and make sure that, you know, no one's getting, no one's kind of looking too deeply at it, hunters go out at night and essentially kill the beasts. And
good idea.
Cover it all up.
Control it all.
Exactly. But the problem is that villagers are kind of getting a bit like blood drunk, essentially. They're kind of taking it upon themselves to go and kill things as well. So that's kind of when you're woken up and you're a bit like, by the way, you don't know any of this stuff really until later. So you're just kind of like, there's these villagers that are trying to kill me, these weird people. And you basically work your way through different areas and you find out a little bit about the fact that there was like this group that were like all about the blood. And, you know, there was like a church and all this stuff. And they're like, this blood will save people. And they're the ones that had like the hunters. They trained all the hunters and all this stuff. And then you've got a kind of second opposing thing that started at the same place, but like the people splintered off and did their own, set up their own groups. So there's this one group, it's all about the blood. There's this other group that are basically saying, oh, it's not about the blood, it's about insight. And they talk about, you know, the fact that there's more going on in the world than this, and that the blood is bad because it's tainted and it will turn you into a beast and stuff, which it, you know, it does. And so along the way, like there's one of the first proper, you encounter a couple of bosses, whatever, but one of the first proper bosses that's like a real difficulty spike is this guy called Father Gascoigne, which makes me think of Gazza always.
Yeah.
football player, Paul Gascoigne. And he's a hunter that's basically gone feral, essentially. So he's like on the verge of turning into a beast, but he's still of the mindset of like, I've got to go out there and kill beasts. But it seems like he's just killing anyone. He's just gone mad. And you fight him and halfway through the fight, he turns into a beast and you have to kill him as a beast, right?
Okay.
Now, one of the things, and this is the example I was going to give in terms of like the storytelling thing, is that before you even get to him, you can pass by, people are locked up in their houses, but you can like have a little chat with some of them. And one of them, there's this little girl going, have you seen my father? He looks like you, essentially meaning that he's a hunter. And yes, could you give him this box or whatever? And you get this little like music box, right?
Yeah.
You know, okay, whatever. So, and none of this is spelled out for you. You're just like, right, okay. And then when you go to this Father Gascoigne fight, if you play the box, the musical box, I should say that she's going like, oh, my mother's gone to look for him or something as well. I'm here by myself. My mother's gone to look for him. I don't know where he is. But anyway, you go there. And when you play this musical box during the fight, he starts like, you know, going a bit mad, like clutching his head and being like, ah, and all this stuff as if like, it's like the human side of him or something is coming through, something like that. But it means obviously that you can kill him a bit. You kind of get free reign to kind of wail on him for a little bit whilst he's doing this. And then in that area, after you defeat him in that area, you can, or you don't have to defeat him first, but whatever, in that area, you find a woman with like a red brooch. And essentially that's the wife, right? So the wife went to find him and either she's been killed by someone else and it's driving him crazy, or I think it's inferred that he's killed her. And you get this little red brooch. Now, if you go back to the little girl, you can basically like lie and just be like, oh, I don't know where they are, whatever. Or you could be like, they're dead and give her the brooch. And either, maybe you keep the brooch, whatever it is. And then she's like, oh, okay, great. And then you can say to her, oh, there's this church, which you come onto later, which, well, there's a couple of places basically that are like havens for your characters that you find along the way. None of which end well, to be honest. But with this little girl, you could be like, oh, go to the cathedral or whatever. They'll look after you. And she's like, okay, great. Then she never makes it there. And if you follow the track, if you were actually bothered afterwards to follow the track to the cathedral from where her place is, you'll go like under some sewers bit, which you can go to any point. And there's this like big like elephant thing there, which if you kill it, you find like an item or something that basically says that the little girl died there. So
why would you kill an elephant?
It's this weird, like massive pig. What's great is that there's a point, there's in the game, you can do these like these massive hits that will kind of stun an animal. And then you can go behind and do like this, yeah, this huge hit that will like knock off a bunch of energy. But he does it by like plunging his fist into the person and like pulling stuff out or whatever. But when he does it to these big pig things, he's just putting his hand up its ass and pulling his
lovely
ass. It's great. It was the first time I did it. I was like, oh my God, like that's just terrific. But so
you want something like, you know, you want something visceral from a game like this, right?
It's very visceral. I mean, there is loads of blood, like literally everything's, you kill things, you're covered in blood constantly. But I'm not going to go into every single NPC character storyline or whatever, but I'll just give that one as an example of like your actions aren't necessarily like good. There's no like good or bad, but also you could go through that whole thing and that never happen. For instance, you could go through the whole thing and it happened and you never know what happened to her and you just carry on. But there's also that element of like, they've got these little details everywhere about absolutely everything. And that's like how they think about literally everything. It's so, there's that element of dedication and like, you know, artistry about it, in terms of like the design and the story and how they work together like that, which is something like really super unique and really like really cool, basically. So yeah, that's just a little example of like the kind of story, how the world tells a story, if that makes sense.
It's making me think of, have you seen that Studio Ghibli film, Princess Mononoke?
Mononoke, yeah.
Yeah.
Another Miyazaki, yeah.
Oh, really?
Is it Miyazaki? Hideo Miyazaki?
I'm not sure. I just thought that image of these giant pigs embodied with some kind of dark spirit being battered from pillar to post.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's funny enough, a lot of Studio Ghibli stuff, or the comics, therefore it came from, whatever, have a lot of influence on the kind of Dark Souls, Bloodborne stuff. For instance, there's a lot of people have drawn a lot of parallels between Castle in the Sky and a lot of the artwork that was in the original Dark Souls game, in terms of like the trees and all this stuff. So yeah, there's definitely some kind of inspiration there, for sure. But yeah, so just coming back to the main plot. So basically you're kind of wandering around, you're killing things. To be honest, I'm not really sure what I was actually doing. It's one of those things where it's like, you got to get this and go here and do that, but fine.
As long as you kill stuff, you're probably safe, right? You're probably on the right lines.
Exactly. Well, there's a guy, Geralt, whatever his name is, has a line which is just like, don't worry too much. Just go out there and kill things. That's what you do. You're a hunter. and that is what you do. So you're just kind of going out there and you're killing stuff. But everyone's kind of connected to this story of like these hunters and what happened with the blood and this tainted blood. And you're same as Dark Souls, really. You're at a point where it's like at the end of like something. So like everything has decayed, like all that interesting story stuff has already happened and you're on the arse end of it basically, which I think is quite cool. And so, yeah, like there's a lot of people in the stories that you hear about who are now these huge, horrible beasts that were like once men or whatever, or leaders of stuff, and they've just become deformed and deranged after a while, which is pretty cool. But basically there comes to a point where you kind of go through a forest, you kill certain things along the way, and then you basically go to this other church which belonged to the people who believed in this thing called Insight, which is an actual thing in the game that you collect. It's an actual inventory item, I should say. And you fall through to like the sea, and then you battle this basically big blob. And you're like, where the fuck am I? And you kill it. And then basically everything kind of goes weird after that. And you realize what happens is that there's these Cthulhu type creatures just around. And what's weird is that they've been around the whole game. And there's been parts where you just like, there's some bits where you get like picked up and like killed. You're like, what the fuck just happened? And it's these creatures that are like killing you basically. And they've been invisible, but they've just been sitting there and they're like on all the buildings. And essentially they're saying they've been there the whole time. And so you start realizing that there's this whole thing about these like ancient ones. And then, so the second half of the game is essentially you kind of fighting, essentially trying to kill and these ancient ones that everyone's like heralding as these like gods. And it turns out that with the Old Hunters DLC, you kind of go to this fishing village where the first one of these old ancient ones just turned up, just basically washed up like a fucking whale or something. And this creature called the Orphan of Koz kind of came out, and that's the like final boss of the DLC. you kill him. But yeah, all that, like the blood kind of initially, like kind of came from there. And if I remember rightly, but also, I think they found some of it in, what's called the dungeons. There's these chalice dungeons, which I'll kind of get into. And they brought some of it up, but it's from another ancient one. So there's all these kind of like weird things to do with them getting blood or whatever from these, ancient things. But part of like the, game story is to like seek the pale blood, and these ancient ones bleed white. So I think the idea is that you've got to like kill these ancient gods. And anyway, you kind of
semen
and actually, yeah, just put their semen over your face and enjoy it. And, so by the end, you essentially kill, this creature, this ancient one. And there's this like baby, this, like weird invisible baby ancient one as well, which I think just dies. And it's all really weird. And you go into like these like nightmare realms and all this stuff. It gets really like weird and dark. And there's like a whole other plane where like people exist without their bodies and all this stuff. And you go in there and you come back, and you're bearing in mind like your hub world, your home is the Hunter's Dream, which is just that. It's like this weird dream place. It's not like a real thing. It's really strange. And basically it ends with like your, and the guy in the wheelchair, German or whatever his name is, going like, okay, cool, you've done it. So now, if you want, I can kill you and you don't have to like be reborn anymore. I'll kill you here and that's it, you're dead, and you can like rest in peace. So you can, as an option at the end of the game, you can be like, okay, cool, thanks. And he will kill you and that's the end of the game. Or you can say like, no, I'm not going to die. And then it's like, okay. And then you take on a boss fight with him,
yeah,
which is a really good boss fight, by the way. It's fucking great. It's really beautiful. It's in the middle of this field. It looks great. If you kill him, then that's the end of the game, as well. But basically, I think you basically take his place. You see this like ancient creature and then you just become German again. And it's like the whole cycle continues, right?
But what otherwise, if you don't kill him?
Well, that's the thing. Well, you have to, you die then and that's the end of the game. Oh. Like, whatever, then you just get reborn as you would normally and you have to take him on again, just like any boss fight. But there's these umbilical cords that you find scattered throughout the game if you do certain things. There's four of them, I believe. And if you eat three of them, then what happens is that this ancient creature comes up after you kill German and it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to, you know, kind of take over your mind like I did with him. But you've eaten these umbilical cords of these ancient ones or whatever, and you're like, no, you have no power over me, like Labyrinth. And then you fight this ancient one at the end. And then if you kill him, this is like the good, true, like hardcore ending, you turn into an ancient one baby. So you turn into this weird like baby slug that's like got, wow, all these tentacles and stuff. And that's the end of the game. And that's what I got. And that's basically it. So it starts,
is that
off
better than just becoming an ancient old one?
Well, that's the thing, is that there's no real like good ending. It's like you're either dead. Well, you're dead, basically, or you turn into this horrible ancient thing, or you basically go, you continue the cycle and you're German or whatever, this guy in this wheelchair that lives in this hunter's dream that just takes on these hunters and tries to get them to kill ancient ones or whatever for some reason. Is it to kill them or whatever it is? Like, it's so weird. So that's kind of basically the story. It's really super complicated, but it's quite cool the way it kind of starts as this, like, oh, right, whatever. I'm kind of fighting these werewolf things and these villagers. Right, yeah, fine. Oh, okay, yeah, it's all blood. It's all to do with blood. They're like, you know, fine, great. And then it turns into this, like, metaphysical, cosmic, like, epic, weird thing about these, like, interdimensional creatures, which you wouldn't really have expected in this game, but makes sense.
Yeah, it's quite a mishmash, right? Stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff about the umbilical cords, you know, that makes me really think of David Cronenberg, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any logical sense, but there's some kind of like body horror about it.
Yeah, and there's a lot, like, in terms of when you look at all the creatures and the design of everything, because a lot of what From Software are really good at is they go to town with the design and they like hide little details, which, you know, other games wouldn't bother with, basically. And there's a lot of like body horror with that as well, with some of the bosses as well, that just like, it just looks horrible. It looks disgusting. It looks weird. And that's why it's so cool. And that's what makes it really like, you know, Japanese, Japanese and cool. So yeah, that's kind of the plot. That's what the game's about. How does that sound to you?
Oh, it all sounds a bit much to me. All this killing and fisting a pig's anus and eating the infected blood. I just like to have a nice sit down with a game of draughts, or that's checkers if you're in America. But
it is intense.
No, it sounds cool. I like, like you said, I like that kind of like mix of all these different varieties of kind of like cults kind of styles of storytelling. You've got the gothic in there. You've got this like surreal horror. You've got some what sounds like kind of like Japanese folk story, folkloric kind of storytelling. Mishmash of lots of different kind of, I think, like mythologies.
Yeah.
So all of that, it sounds like quite a heady brew.
It is really
plus a
heady.
Ton of a bucket full of blood. Yeah. You can't really go wrong, right?
Exactly. Throughout the whole thing. And yeah, it's really cool. And that's just, that is honestly, that's just like, that sounds complicated, but that's just an overview. Like, there's loads of tons more stuff that's like, that's part of it, and the different characters involved and all this stuff. Like, you know, Lawrence, the first vicar, and all this stuff. I won't go into all that too much detail, but bloody good stuff. So I guess next we'll kind of talk a little bit about the gameplay, how it actually plays itself, and a bit about the multiplayer as well.
Yeah, because you might not care about the story at all. Like you said, you can just sort of coast through this a superficial level and just enjoy the look and the gameplay and smash in some pig's anuses with your sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer. You do kind of, you can probably have it, a sledgehammer. That's true. So yeah, let's kind of go into a little bit about the gameplay itself. So, I don't know if anyone out there is familiar with how Dark Souls works, but it's Bloodborne takes a very similar like style to it, whereby it's an RPG. So you have stats and you collect things called blood echoes. And that's basically your currency to level up. And obviously the more you level up, the stronger you get, but you can put it in different places depending on what kind of, how you want to play the game, the rest of the game going forward, if you know what I mean. And you have weapons. You have different kind of weapons, and there's stuff that you can pick up along the way that will upgrade those weapons. You have like certain buffs and all that, that like you might get more blood echoes from a kill, for instance. You've got things that might up your health, and you have to make a choice on what ones you get, but you also have to find them as well. So there's that kind of RPG element to it, which means you can really like personalize your experience. And the same with all Dark Souls and people who are into fashion souls, which is basically where there's just so much costume stuff out there that you can make your character look like whatever. A lot of people love doing a bit of that. And that's the same with Bloodborne as well. There's not as much choice as the Dark Souls series, but you can do a bit of that. And the gameplay is a little bit different. So where Dark Souls is kind of like, you can play it however you want, but essentially a lot of people play Dark Souls with like a shield and a sword, right? So you shield up when you go into different places. That means that if you get hit, you kind of defend yourself, and you've got your sword to actually obviously attack. And the same with Dark Souls as well. There's a dodge button, which gives you basically iframes, which are invincibility frames. So it means that if you can time it right, certain attacks basically won't actually hurt you or hit you. Which sounds like, oh, that's really easy, but it is the hardest thing to time ever. And there's a 95 to 96% probability that you will get hit unless you know perfectly when to actually do it. So that's kind of the Dark Souls way of playing. Now, Bloodborne is a bit different because it kind of forces you to attack more. So you don't have a shield, for instance. Instead, you've got a gun and you can have different guns. And what happens is the gun is basically used to shock, I guess, like characters. So if they're going to like wind up to attack you, if you shoot your gun, they'll get stunned and then you can hit them. And also what it means is that if you get hit, then you can essentially, by hitting back immediately afterwards, you can get back some of your health, which, you know, might not sound like a big deal, but it's actually a really big deal because it kind of makes you go more on the forward foot. So rather than being a bit more defensive and a little bit like safer, this is asking you to be a bit more risky with how you play, if that makes sense. So yeah, and it's pretty cool. And in Dark Souls, your health was basically with these things called Estus flasks, which at each kind of save point, or it was a fire, you would get they would refresh and you would get however many that you would get. And you get more and more as the game went along and you picked up stuff along the way. And then each time you went to these one of places, they would refresh. The enemies would respawn every time you rest. Same with Bloodborne. Every time you go back to a lantern instead of a fire, all the enemies come back apart from the bosses or whatever. But you don't get like a refillable thing in Bloodborne. Instead, you get essentially like health kits, which are blood vials. And the blood vials, you are your health, and you can carry up to 20, I think it is. Well, it depends. I think you can change it as you kind of go along because it's an RPG, and the rest are like basically stored. So you have a certain amount that you can actually carry, but they are consumable. So they don't just automatically refill. So there's been points where, like, if I'm taking on a boss and I've used all my blood vials, I will have to go and farm, which means basically grinding out and going to like smaller enemies and killing as many as possible to get back a whole bunch of blood vials to then go on to take on a boss, if that makes sense. And that's kind of like how the health system works. So a lot of it is like based on combat and on technique and your weapons and how you use your stats. And there's not much like, you're not like jumping up anywhere or things like that. It's quite flat. There is a little bit of platforming in some bits, but not really. And that's kind of the gameplay. So every time you die, you go back to like the hunter's dream, I guess. And you have to, if you want to get back your blood echoes, which is the currency you've been doing to level up, you will have to venture back to where you were and pick them up. If you die on your way back to where you died the first time around, those blood echoes are gone, which means you could kill a boss. Normally there's a lamp afterwards, but whatever, you could kill a whole bunch of enemies and you haven't reached a lamp, which means you haven't been able to cash them in to level up. You could die and then you die again on your way back and they're gone forever, which people hate because it's essentially losing out on experience or whatever. And it feels like you've done it all for now, but it kind of makes it that little bit more edgy when you play because it's kind of all hanging on the line sometimes. Now, it becomes an element like the Dark Souls games where it doesn't, and in Dark Souls, they are souls, where you think it's a big deal to begin with, and then you realize it's not actually that big a deal. So I used to get really hung up if I lost like 200 souls or whatever. And then later on down the game, I was losing like, I don't know, 30, 40,000 souls and I wasn't bothered. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like relative. And after a while, you know, you could do a lot of people, the same as Dark Souls, a lot of people go through the whole thing without leveling anything up and they just complete the game that way. You can do that. Obviously, it's really difficult and you have to be a bit of a pro. But it is possible. And that's kind of it, really. You kind of you pick up a whole bunch of different items along the way and stuff that have certain effects. Essentially what you're doing is you've got your gun and you've got your main weapon and you're rolling around and you're shooting things and trying not to get surrounded and being quite methodical, because even the smallest enemy, who you've probably killed thousands of, if you mistime something or you get a little bit too bold, they'll kill you quite quickly. And that's just the way it goes. And that does happen.
Sounds very versatile.
Yeah. It's very much up for like, that's what a lot of people like about Dark Souls. You can do it more in Dark Souls than in Bloodborne, really. But you can kind of style how you want to play. if that makes sense.
Cool,
as you kind of go along, which is what
one of the things. Really. So one of the things I heard about when I was looking at this game was the multiplayer aspect.
Yeah,
which sounded quite interesting. How does that all work?
Yeah, so that's it's not how normal gamers would probably see multiplayer. So again, I know I keep saying like Dark Souls, but obviously it's the same thing. But so around the world, you can leave messages and stuff, which is cool and does help. But you can also leave like your mark. And it basically means that you can summon people, you ring a bell and you can summon people to come and help you within the game. And they'll appear. And you can do that, you know, co-op or whatever. At the same time, you can also get invaded, which means that someone out there in the world, a real person, but there are like NPC versions of this that happen throughout the game for people that play offline. But the idea is that someone can come in and try and kill you in your own game whilst you're doing like...
Why would they do that?
For one thing,
just out of pure malice.
Well, yeah, some of them. There's an element where... you'll get souls in Dark Souls, but in this game you will get blood echoes and all this stuff and experience certain items as well. But also the multiplayer aspect, you can join factions in the game, and if you join these certain factions, it means that when you kill other people or whatever that might be like an enemy faction, say in the story, you will get certain item from that which helps you to level up basically in your faction, and you can get different items at the end of that. So there's like a whole other game basically within it.
Cool.
That, you know, you can actually play. And what it means
is
that...
What if you're not in a faction? You're not in a faction. You're just little Jimmy playing on your own.
I think you...
And then someone comes along and marauds you, rapes and pillages you, and leaves you lying in a blood pool.
Yeah.
Is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Is that a risk?
Wow. It is a risk, yeah. I think...
That's quite brutal.
I think you do... You're automatically in like a default faction. I might be mistaken, but I believe you're in something. Maybe not. Maybe you're not in anything. You're just kind of, little Jimmy just walking around. But yeah, you do have the ability to go into a certain faction as you go along the way. And you can change. You can chop and change at any point, I believe. I don't think you can... You don't necessarily have to stay within that certain faction throughout the rest of the game, or whatever. That's not like a blood oath for life kind of thing, even though they make it that way. But yeah, it's a whole other game within that. So it's cool. Like I used it, bearing in mind, I played this early. Like I think I completed it at the beginning of this year. There's still tons of people using it, which is great. And I used a couple of people, not a lot, but for like a couple of bosses, I tried to get people to co-op and help me out with it, which is very useful. I did get invaded a few times, I'd say about half a won, half a didn't. It's a bit annoying.
Did you make a note of their names and where they live?
No. They do have their usernames come up. So if you're that bothered, you could like, you could make a note of it and search them out and be like, you dick, why did you... fucking do that. But that's part of the experience. Yeah.
I like that whole, that someone is actually screwing you over in real life.
Yeah. There's tons of stories out there. You can go to, go to Reddit or whatever, where people will go to town on trying to like fuck you over as much as possible. In Dark Souls, for instance, there's an item which will make you look like a piece of furniture. And so you can... If I remember rightly, I heard about a story where the guy had got invaded or something. And so he turned into like a bit of the furniture, like a table or whatever. And he just sat there and he's just watching this invader like running around this level, like trying to fucking find him. He just kind of sat there and let him do it. There's little stupid things like that. But you can, there's emotes. You can't speak to each other. So you're not like talking to the person or whatever. But there are like emotes, so you can like, the idea is that you bow before a duel. That's kind of one of the things that you should do, but which a lot of people don't. But and all this stuff. And like, if like, you know, fist pumping and all this stuff, if you beat a boss together or whatever and all this.
Nice. I like there's some etiquette to the game.
Yeah. But it's self-imposed as well. That's not, the game doesn't tell you to do it. That's just people. That's what I mean. It's part of this whole culture behind it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really good. But yeah, so it's an interesting like multiplayer experience, but it doesn't work the same way. Yeah, I think you can.
I think it's really cool. I really like that about it. This like friend or foe aspect. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a nice freeze on and an edge to everything.
Yeah. That's what I mean. You can ask for a friend. Like someone won't just, well, I think people can invade and then help you, if I remember rightly, depending on faction or whatever. But normally you have to like call for help, basically. But yeah, that's the point, is that the idea, you could just be going through the game and then suddenly, fuck, I'm invaded. Great. Like, brilliant. And then you're just seeing this like little red guy like coming closer and closer to you in the background. You're like, oh, fuck's sake, he's coming. If he is, he's going to find me. And normally they're all like really super powerful because they've been doing it for ages. But they do kind of like try and level it with where you are level-wise. But you do get people who take advantage of that and are maybe just super pro and just get up to a certain level and stop, so that they make sure they're still put in with people. Otherwise, if you're too high a level, then you won't get put in with people of that level as well, because there's only like three of you playing at once, for instance.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing behind it. Another part of the game is this weird thing called the Chalice Dungeons. Now, this is kind of like the end game stuff. So if you've completed the game, but you still want to do some more Bloodborne, then you can do this. And basically you get like a lot of cool items this way. You get a lot of bosses who you won't get in the normal game, but it's a bit of a slog because essentially you have these like predetermined rooms with just like, you're doing the same thing again and again, which I know people say, well, it's what you're doing anyway. But it's in the same rooms, the same like structure, and you're just kind of slogging away at it to get to these like bosses and get these items. And each time it gets a lot more difficult and there's tons of them. And the idea is that this is where part of where this old blood came from, was these Chalice Dungeons. And there is a story element to it as well, if you want to go that deep in it, where it was like the mother of one of the ancient ones that were born or whatever. It's like one of the bosses, for instance, stuff like that, which is all quite interesting. But I never did any of that just because I could not be bothered. I'd already played like whatever, 40, 50 hours or something of the bloody thing. So I was like, you know, I'm done. But there's that element to it as well, which you can do offline, and you can keep going with that. And you can kind of bring in different items to create a chalice dungeon and all this stuff, and you can play other people's, I think. So that's a whole other part of the game, which kind of gives it a bit more longevity as well. So it's definitely like a good purchase. It's Dark Souls style, but a lot faster. A lot more on the front foot, and yeah, it's a pretty cool game to actually physically play. It just feels good as well, like the noises, the blood everywhere, the cool weapons you get. It's pretty sweet.
I liked the music as well that I heard.
Yeah.
The soundtrack sounds pretty good.
The soundtrack is good, and I think what we'll do is we'll take a little break now. And yeah, we'll kind of come on a bit more into like the design and the music of it, the kind of sheen, the aesthetic, and see what we think of that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey marketers, want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So yeah, coming on to the next part of the Bloodborne, it's kind of going into a little bit of the nitty gritty, which is, which you kind of touched upon already, which is the design, the music, the sound design and all this stuff. And I think a good place to maybe start is kind of showing a little bit of that boss fight, the Vicar Amelia boss fight, for people to kind of listen to the kind of sounds and music of what actually happens within the game and just the sheer terror, basically, that kind of comes from it. So I might just play a little bit of that now.
Somebody had a good time making some of those screams, right, in the studio.
I have no idea how they put that together. Like, it is absolutely blood-curdling. Like, it's beyond, like, it's like an animalistic noise, but also, like, with the tinge of, like, human pain.
I think maybe they actually found the actual creature from The Neverending Story and just slayed it in the studio.
Tortured him.
Captured his dying screams.
Yeah, the reason why is because he looks a bit like... the dragon, the white dragon thing. I think it's a she, sorry. Neverending Story, which is referenced in the latest Stranger Things as well. Isn't that funny?
Remarkable.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. So as we said, it's kind of very like Lovecraftian. It's very gothic, very horror. I think there's an element here where the amount of detail that goes into these games with Miyazaki and From Software is incredible. And everything just looks beautiful in its like horrid darkness and its, you know, horrific nature. Every little bit, every house, every table, every world, every part of it has been just it's so intrinsically valued, basically. They've just put so much effort into every single detail of this that, you can just kind of go around and be amazed by it, I think. And it's the same with the music as well, right? Like, it feels epic when it needs to, especially with the boss fights. And it's worth keeping in mind as well, the same with Dark Souls, is that it's very quiet most of the time as you're kind of walking around. Which means that when you get the boss fights come in and the music comes up, it makes it feel like uber epic because, you know, it's suddenly everything's happening. So it's like everything was just really quiet like 2 minutes ago. And now like there's this huge like musical score and like there's loads of noises going on and I'm panicking, like rolling around and trying to kill this thing. It works on and again, that's what I love about these games is that it works. Everything works on a gameplay level as well. They just thought about the relationship between each kind of aspect of making a game and it all affects the other. Yeah. Did you think it was a bit steampunky? A lot of people said it's a little bit steampunk. I'm not quite sure.
I didn't see that in the footage I saw. I picked up on, it looked very, like I said, like Tim Burton's Gotham to me. Like you've said, European Gothic. Mm. Initially, there's this opening shot of these buildings and a very narrow street. And then it pans down and there's some like really dingy, discarded, old school Victorian looking pram. Mm. And then it kind of moved to a more sort of like outdoors, fantastical scene.
Mm.
So none of that spoke to me of steampunk. I mean, that's just being used as a sort of catch-all that was thrown around a lot 5 years ago.
Yeah, and as well, I think because like a lot of steampunk stuff was in that, was based in that era of the, like, I don't know, industrial age, I've no idea, but like it's like the past, basically. So when things are like seen as that kind of like, they take place within that time of, you know, kind of Victorian past or something like that, people just a bit like, oh, it's a bit steampunky, because there's also that, it's also a little bit of like, I think because of the weapons, say, and the guns and stuff like that, it's like, oh, there's a little bit of like technology almost in there, which is a bit...
Yeah, what are the weapons like? Are they all sort of mechanical?
Some of them are, some of them are. So one that I used, which I got in the old Hunters DLC, and then I went back and used for like probably the second half of the game, is a thing called a Whirligig Saw.
That sounds good.
Which was cool. So it's basically like a circle with spikes on, and you can use it as you would like, I don't know, like a normal saw thing. You could use it as like, wait, you kind of had like the how do I put this, like the butt of it, so it's like a big stick, yeah, basically. But then when you put the spiky saw thing, like a circular saw, and it, you could like rev it up. So with a lot of like the monsters and stuff, you just stick it out and just like turn it on. Basically, it's going, and it's just like chopping up the bosses or whatever.
That's so satisfying. That reminds me of Doom.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like a chainsaw, literally. But literally, what it is, it's like a weird chainsaw.
Okay, so that's, I can see then why some people would say that's like a steampunky kind of thing.
Yeah, things like that.
I mean, having versatile weapons like that, where you can play around with them and use them in different ways, that's really fun.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of the weapons,
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, are really cool. You get like, like, you know, what else? You can get like just like axes, but you can get like swords that kind of like stretch out kind of thing, which are pretty cool.
Inspector Gadget
style. Yeah, there's a whole heap of like really different weapons. But a lot of people like will, you know, go around and like try and max up every single weapon, because each one just completely changes your play style as you play it. And it, you could use a different weapon and play the whole game again, and it'll be a little bit like you're playing a different game almost.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the beauty of it.
Can you just go in just with your fists?
I think so. I'm pretty sure you
punch
can
your way through the game.
Yeah. You definitely can in Dark Souls. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can do that, but I might be wrong.
What's your favorite weapon to use?
Mine was definitely that Whirligig Saw. I loved that.
Yeah.
That's great. And then the, it's not called a shotgun. It's like a butter burst or whatever it's called. What do they call it? One of those old guns.
Oh, a blunderbuss.
Blunderbuss, that's it. Like that. That was always a favorite. It's kind of short distance, because by that point I'm panicking if they've got that close. I'm not shooting from far off targets. I'm getting in there. And if they're about to swipe, I want something to stop them in their tracks if I can.
Nice, blast a shrapnel in the face.
Yeah,
exactly. Off.
Take that, you bastard. Then get behind them and basically do a massive attack. it sounds weird. It sounded weirder than I meant it to. I guess one of the big things of this game and all these games is that the enemy designs are great, but the bosses is where it's at. Essentially, a lot of people say Dark Souls and Bloodborne are essentially a series of boss battles with some shit in between, which I kind of understand, because each boss battle is like really super memorable. And there's a lot, you get a lot, and each one makes you, it's really super difficult. It makes you have to reassess what you've been doing throughout the entire game. And the design, just literally the design of them is amazing, like beautiful in its horror as well. And I think that's where Bloodborne really sticks out. I think it's got some of the best bosses throughout the entire, like, From Software series, and that's really saying something. Go on.
You go.
I was going to say, just because it's very, like, visceral, and it feels kind of like what we were saying before with, like, Cronenberg and body horror and stuff like that, it feels very, like, nasty. And the amount of detail that's on it, like bandages, like dripping with blood, and like you know, fire and poison or whatever and all this stuff. It's just, it's cool. It's really cool.
Some nice, nasty stuff.
Mm. Yeah,
I heard a lot of talk from people saying that some of these boss battles, some of the best gaming experiences they've had. Mm. And it's a kind of, it's like a, almost like a life experience that they've kind of absorbed and will stay with them forever and ever.
Mm. Yeah,
that's how poetic it was.
Yeah, there was. It was a bit weird for me because I had done Dark Souls 1, 2, 3, and then Bloodborne back to back. And there was so by that point, when I finished Bloodborne, I was like, I was kind of used to these like a big, amazing boss experiences. That makes sense. But when I think back, and I think it's the same thing. A lot of people say like the first, your first like Soulsborne game is your favorite because it's the first one that opened you up to all this stuff. So I think the fact that I played Bloodborne like last in that series means that it probably didn't have as much of an effect as it would have had I not played, had it not been like my first game in the series of playing these, if that makes sense. But yeah, some of them, like that Vicar Amelia boss fight, just those noises that was happening as I was trying to fight it. I was just like, that really stuck with me.
Did it scare you?
It was weird when it's really late at night and you've got it quite loud. It's like,
did you do a wee?
Fucking hell. No, well, nothing scares me, Dan. I'm a man.
Did you cry?
I'm an adult. No, I didn't. I cried afterwards when I was like, I've, you know, killed it.
Yeah. Wait, that's it. You've been through this big battle and suddenly it's done. Just release the tension just out of sheer relief.
Out of sheer relief. Yeah, it's for some of them, I think the last boss I did was after I completed the Orphan of Kos, there was a boss called, I think it was Lawrence, the first vicar, who he ends up, he's fine to begin with, but then he kind of basically loses half his body and he's on the floor swiping at you and he's got like lava pouring out of his ass or his spine, whatever, by that point. And so you can't really get close to him and I wasn't really sure what to do. And I did that so many times that it hurt me. It got close to, people may know that listen to this, like when I did the Nameless King in Dark Souls 3, that was the most I'd ever attempted at any boss. And I would say that was probably about 70 times, maybe, I tried doing this boss. And Lawrence was the only one that's kind of got close to that. I would say Lawrence probably took me about 45 tries in the end, probably, till I actually defeated him.
The devious Lawrence.
Yeah, it was just like hardcore. And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, when you do really well at the start, and then you seem to like not be able to go back to that initial level of success. You're like, how am I getting worse the more I'm playing it? I don't understand. No,
it sounds like for a while. It's like the setup for one of those logic puzzles. It's like, there's a man lying on the ground surrounded by lava. How do you kill him?
It's a bit like that. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you've got to know when to roll, what direction to roll. You basically have to learn its methods. And, you know, be able to, that's the way to kind of defeat it. So each one is a little bit like a little puzzle in its own way. But they're really good. And I highly recommend people who, you know, people find it a bit difficult to maybe start with Bloodborne. And Dark Souls is now remastered, which you can kind of get on board with. But every single one is as challenging as the other. And I think people would really love Bloodborne. But again, part of the difficulty of it is that it doesn't tell you anything. So there's kind of a tutorial, but not really. It's just like you are kind of pretty much put straight in the firing line. And a lot of people find it difficult when you're not just told what to do at the start. So a lot of people fall off early and they don't get the full benefit of basically the game and what it has to offer. And that's the thing, is it's one of those things like in life, like the harder you work for it, the more you get out of it. And that's why these games do really well, is because it doesn't patronize you, but also it asks you to actually put some effort in. And people sometimes think that putting any effort in is too much effort, and that's where you won't like it. Now, for me, I get the buzz of like, I've worked at this, especially with a thing like an RPG, where it's like, I've really, like, you know, I'm really thinking about this. Like, I'm thinking about it all the time when I'm not playing it. I'll watch stuff on it. I'll read stuff on it and all this. And I get like a bit obsessive about it all. And yeah, I don't want it kind of like spelled out. I don't necessarily want like an easy experience. I like the idea of working hard for something and it getting paid off in the end.
You're in the game battling.
Yeah. It's supposed to be. It's like, you know,
you're fighting.
Yeah. And people
makes me so angry hearing that about these lazy layabouts. You don't want to be proactive and engage in the game.
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age, there's so much information available. If you're stuck, you just go on YouTube.
Well, that's it. And that's what I don't understand.
Not like me.
Yeah.
Back in the day, playing Mickey Mouse in Castle of Illusion on the Sega Mega Drive, hours and hours I poured into trying to figure out how to get past that piranha on level 3.
Yeah.
And there was no one to turn to. I even wrote a letter to Games Master. Games Master.
Games Master.
Can you tell me how to get through the piranha? Just go on YouTube. These people, honestly.
Patrick Moore was always such a dick to those kids, wasn't he? His Games Master. Why can't you do
sometimes
it? You're an idiot. Yeah.
Sometimes he'd throw a crumb though from his table.
Yeah, true. But yeah, you're right. Like, yeah. Well, part of the what's funny about these games is that, especially when it's the first Dark Souls, for instance, there's quite a bit written about this, about how people would get review copies, right? So the journalists would get the review copies, and there's nothing out there yet because it's not been released. So they would literally be going in blind.
Yeah.
And they would be able to. And a lot of people in the first Dark Souls, basically, there was a mechanic whereby you got cursed. And you do get it in the other games as well a little bit. But what used to happen is in the first one, you would lose, each time you got cursed, you'd lose like whatever it is, like 20% of your maximum health, right?
Yeah.
And it ended up that it basically didn't have a limit. So if you kept dying to the same boss and getting, not boss, the same enemy and getting cursed, it would mean that you would get to a point where if you got hit once, you were dead. And that happens a lot in the game. And a lot of people found that very hard to deal with. Now, it was patched later on whereby, like, instead of going down to like a crumb or whatever, the lowest it would go down to is 25% of your health, basically. And then you were able to cure it. But the way to cure it was all the way back in a fucking other side of the game, which you've just come from. So you'd have to go back, get cured, go back, and then try and get a little bit further on that side, which a lot of people didn't even know how to do or anything when they were like reviewing the first Dark Souls. So they were just stuck basically in this like horrid cycle where like they had to cross like half the game basically to try and get this cure without getting hit or touched by anything, which was like near impossible. And yeah, it got patched
out. It's quite a bold move for when you're trying to promote your game, right?
Yeah.
And get reviewers on board.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's quite funny. So apparently, like with a lot of these games, is that other journalists would talk to other journalists. They'd have their own like group chats basically to like help each other out with the game because there's nothing out in there. And it's like, that's true, like difficulty. Not just like the fact where it's like, oh, I don't know what the controls are or whatever. So fuck it. It's like, well, just look online for like a simple thing that tells you how to do, you know, what the controls are, the 10 things to know before you start Bloodborne. There's loads of shit like that. Just watch that and just get, but end of day, what I'm saying is that it really does pay off. So I guess now, Dan, we're going to go into a little segment called Nerd Corner. So basically, Nerd Corner is where we take a little part of the subject that we're discussing and nerd out over it. It's something that only a real nerd on the subject would appreciate. And for this one, Dan, I read the comics that came out around Bloodborne. And to give you guys a little bit more detail about it, there was a few released. And the one that I watched, I read, was called The Death of Sleep. And it kind of ruined the main game of Bloodborne for me, basically, a little bit, because the illustrations are quite good, but there's a boss in it that you have to battle quite early on called the Bloodstaffed Beast. He's a really good boss, actually. And essentially the comics was this thing hounding you as a hunter, a new hunter, someone else. And you're trying to escort this child to the fishing village that's at the end of the Old Hunters DLC. Now, throughout the game, as I was saying, it's called like Seek the Pale Blood, Seek the Pale Blood. You're not really sure what it is. And this, and the comic book basically says, has this kid that's called like, that is the Pale Blood. And in the comic book, it's like, oh, so this, the hunter's literally like, oh, so this is the Pale Blood that you keep telling everyone to seek out. It's like, and in the fucking comic, it's like, well, it could be anything. And you're like, right, okay. So basically what they've done is totally been non-committal to the idea of the message of the game. And it's really annoying.
I hate that.
It's really shit. It's just like, we've just kind of gone with something, doesn't necessarily, but we can't actually play with the lore of the game properly. So we'll just kind of like shrug it off. So you basically escort this little like kid who's got these like special powers. And then when you get to like the fishing village where like the Orphan of Cos was, this washed up old thing, whatever, he starts like fucking like turning into this like weird monster thing. It's all like disgusting and horrible, which is quite a good little, a good panel of the comic book. And then, yeah, you're like, oh, I should kill it. But, you know, do you, don't you? And that's kind of how it ends, basically. Meanwhile, the whole like blood-stuffed beast is chasing you. And I read it and was just like, like completely forgot about it almost immediately after reading it. And it was a real shame because I was like, oh, is this cool that they're going to like explore a bit more of like stuff that happened like pre the game, it seems like. And yeah, it didn't really do much with it. It kind of fell a bit flat. But that was just kind of indicative of like how much I nerded out over Bloodborne. The fact I was willing to buy these shitty comics that just had like, that were just totally ripping off everything that kind of went into the love of Bloodborne. So yeah, I don't, unless you're really bothered about it, I wouldn't bother reading any of the comics because it doesn't seem like it's just worth it.
Where did you get these comics from?
Online.
What were they?
Amazon.
Were they issued in the UK or just in the States?
I think they're UK as well. I can't remember the company that did them, but there's like, I think there's three, as in like three series, if you know what I mean, three books that were made up of smaller issues or whatever.
Trade collections.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they're not very good. To be honest, the Dark Souls ones, I think it's the same people. The Dark Souls ones aren't particularly good either. Actually, to be honest, the Dark Souls ones are terrible. There was one I read, which is about one of the Black Knights and the first Dark Souls. And again, it was one of those things where it's like, they've given the characters in the game like voices and their own like personalities, which differ from how I was viewing them in my head as I was playing the game. And I was like, I don't like it. How they depicted like Seath the Scaleless in the comics was just terrible, which is like this dragon creature, which I won't go into. It's a whole thing. But yeah, not great.
Despite that, if somebody did want to read it, what would it set them back?
£7, maybe. £7 too much. don't bother. So yeah, I guess we'll kind of come on to our final impressions now. Dan, there was going to be an element here where we were going to pick a random celebrity and try and do, and try. But now that the reality of it is in front of us, I'm wondering whether we do that or whether we just give a final impression as per normal.
Oh, final impression. I get it now. I get it. It's our final impressions, but it's also a final impression of a celebrity giving their impression.
That's right. Correct.
Okay.
And I'll try and do an impression of it. This has to work both ways as well. Like if you're heading up a subject, you're going to have to do one that I pick up.
All right. Off the top of my head, Mel Brooks.
All right. Fucking hell. Let me just...
Mel Brooks.
Let me just... I think I can do this. I think that Bloodborne was... it had a time and a place, and that was 5 years ago. And Not very funny. I didn't laugh once. A lot of blood. It's But I had a great time playing that game. And you know, Woody came up to me and he said, "Mel, you made the Elephant Man." And there's a lot of people in this game that look like the Elephant Man. And I said, you know what? You're right. And I love it. I love this game. I give it 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. That's 10 things, and I give them 10 of them. It's me, Mel Brooks. I love Bloodborne. Love it.
Incredible. Wow, I was not expecting him to love it so much.
I wonder if that worked. I wonder if that was worth it.
I thought it was great. I don't know how you managed to pull that out of your ass.
Yeah, well, I'm usually putting things in there, so that was good. So now we're going to, you know, we liked it, but I think let's listen to some other people's reviews and see what they think.
Hate it.
So in this segment, we're going to be going through the good and the bad reviews that sit online with Bloodborne. And Dan, I'm going to read this out. You tell me what you think. Okay.
Okay.
So this first one is by Rico. It gives it 5 out of 5 stars. No idea about the game, but boyfriend loves. That's the title.
Okay. That's not the review.
The review's close to that. No idea about game, but boyfriend loves. Compare with other games he has, I think this is slightly more challenging and more stuff going on. Quite entertaining to watch his play, at least.
<What's he?
laughs> Loves the game. Gave it 5 stars. Gave it 5 stars. Hasn't even played it. Just like, no idea about the game, but I thought I'd give it 5 out of 5.
I think the general impression you get from watching someone else play is a valid way of assessing anything.
Mm.
You know, I haven't read War and Peace, but I watched someone read a bit of it and they seem to enjoy it. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a great book.
Top reviews, top notch. It's true. Good point. The next one is MWF. And the title of this is probably the greatest video game ever made. And it goes, probably the greatest video game ever made. The best game on PS4 by light years. The only game I remember having such an impact on my senses is RE4, that's Resident Evil 4, which to me was the greatest game ever made. But Bloodborne, I think, has just taken the crown, a true gaming masterpiece. There you go. This guy loves it. MWF loves a bit of that. 5 out of 5.
Sounds like a nice level critique there. Sounds like a sensible person. So
exactly.
Sounds like he's loving it.
No, and that is
Man
a lot
with fingers.
Exactly. A lot of people saying that. Now, let's go on to the ones who didn't like it so much. So this is Owen. He's giving it 1 out of 5, ridiculously hard. I'm not one for giving up on games, but Bloodborne is ridiculous. The one thing that lets this game down is lack of game saves. There's a typo there with this that he's done. Like most these days, games have autosave as you progress. Bloodborne doesn't have this feature. Not true. There are checkpoints you have to reach which are so far apart you can't get through your current level without dying. When you do, you have to start all over again. I'm not talking 10 minutes of play here. You could be an hour in, die, and have to repeat everything you struggle to get past. Controls are meh, and visuals are not as good as it was hyped up to be. Overall, it's poor. I like it.
But they've got lanterns. You said lanterns. Those lanterns.
Yep, those lanterns are there. But that's the checkpoints that he's talking about. But it does kind of have an autosave feature, because if you exit the game, if you like want to go and have a wee, you can exit the game and it will just save you where you were, basically. So it does have kind of an autosave feature. But yeah, if you die, you have to go back to your lantern, and that's kind of the point. Don't die.
Yeah. Or get better at putting lanterns around the place.
This is it. Well, there's the culture of get good. Dan, GITGUD, where just people use it as a catch-all to be like, you're not good enough to play the game.
Yeah. So that's the advice to Owen, right?
Get good.
Yeah. Back up your ideas, Malado.
Well, you just have to really tackle things. Like, you just have to take it on the chin and move on, basically. You don't have to get good. You know, I'm shit at it. I'm shit at these games, really. But I just kind of, you know, get with it. The next one is by surprise, apparently. It's going. I hate this game. My boyfriend loves it, but it makes him moody. He plays it for hours. And when I go the room to talk to him, he always dies and blames me. It's because you can't save it. So when you die, you have to start again from the beginning.
That's fantastic.
You can't save it. You can save
it. Great review.
I love it.
A little insight into the horrible relationship.
Yeah, it's like completely opposite from that previous one. But it's also the fact that it's like, still not played it. They've not played it. She's gone out of her way to review it because her boyfriend plays it and he gets a bit moody with her. But I'll show them. So that's it. That's Bloodborne. That was quite the blood, sweat, and tears going.
Yeah,
do that.
This show was born in blood.
Exactly, Dan. Do you think you'd play this game if you had a PS4 and the time?
I'd play it once to give it a go. I'd set myself a limit. You know, I'd say I'm just going to play this for a few hours. And I don't know, maybe I'll get hooked and want to play it a bit more. I definitely want to do the that multiplayer thing. I really like that idea. I'd like to see that used in more games.
So now we're going to come up
Oddborn. To Oddborn.
True. Why didn't we do that at the start? It works so well. So now we come to the segment where we are going to choose next week's episode. That's right. We have a table full of stuff that we want to do, and we'll randomly select using a computerized algorithm what next week's episode will be. And you guys can have the chance to send in what you think we should cover. By going to oddcastoddballs@gmail.com, our email address, and send in what you think you would like to see on the list. And it might get selected. It's got just as much chance as all the others. So why not? So Dan, are you ready to find out what next week's episode is going to be about?
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Right. I'm going to press the button and we're going to find out what it is. You ready?
This is like the lottery.
It is a little bit, isn't it? Who knows what's going to come up? Here we go. Wow. It is one of my selections.
Yeah.
It's Wild Beasts, the band. Now, seeing as I just put the band Wild Beasts instead of an album, I think it might be an idea that we, I'll select a Wild Beast album that we do. How about that?
Yeah, we can have a general just chit-chat about them.
We can have a chit-chat about the band.
A quick cursory look at their career.
Yeah, well, what would you rather? Do you want to kind of do a deep dive on an album, or should we just kind of go through them willy-nilly? Just do their whole career in an episode.
Yeah, because I don't actually know that much about them, you know, outside of a few songs, I think. I don't even think about any of their albums, so...
Oh, this is going to be an absolute treat for you. Okay, so next week's episode is on Wild Beasts. There we go. Dan must be a bit gutted that I chose this one, and then next week is one of mine.
Yeah, I didn't realise this was going to be actually part of the show.
Yes, yeah, it's part of the show now. This is it.
I thought this was just like something you designed to entertain yourself.
Well, it does. Weird, it does that as well.
Episode generator.
It does both. Wild Beasts.
Well, you know, take it on the chin, suck it up. I'm sure at some point we're going to hit my every single Beach Boys album.
Oh, God. So, well, yeah, exactly.
My time will come.
Yeah, I love the way that's just one thing, which is good. just squeeze that into one episode, it'd be fine. Right, so next week, Wild Beasts. And I just want to say a big thank you for everyone's listening. And see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Oddcast, guys. We're part of a New Winter group, so head on over to anewwinter.com to check out our other shows. Go to patreon.com/anewwinter to support the network. You can email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com and follow this and our other shows on Twitter and Instagram @anewwinter. So, see you next time on the Oddcast.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.